Welcome to the Untold Tales audio anthologies. Written by Don Muchow and narrated by Melissa Del Toro Schaffner. Conversations with an uncle on the occasion of his passing. When I got the message from my uncle Jim, indicating that the moment of his death was at hand, it would be hard to say that I was shocked. My uncle had been ill for quite some time, some would say mentally, and it was only because of his unexceptionable wealth that he was deemed merely eccentric for so long. In his salad days, James Everett Bitterman, entrepreneur and robotics genius, had been considered a brilliant man. He had studied with Michael Raybert at Carnegie Mellon, rubbed shoulders with the likes of Marvin Minsky and Hans Moravec. No one questioned that he was a genius. What they did question was his grip on sanity. In the last few years, he had retreated to a think tank in New Mexico and dropped entirely out of sight. When my family learned of his illness, he returned exactly one phone call and had written no letters to date. He talked to and saw no one. Except for the emails of which my summons to a small converted abbey about 50 miles outside of Santa Fe was only the latest, he communicated with no one. I asked him why, and he had replied only that his health had deteriorated, and his ability to move and speak became so restricted that email was his only means of communication. I obliged him by staying in as close contact as I could. His message had been cryptic. "Come, Edgar. It is almost time. I want you to be here when I pass." Now, here I was, behind the wheel of a hastily rented Ford Taurus, dust and Choya and Saguaro whizzing past the window as the low hills dipped, surfaced, and leapt like a dolphin following a fishing boat. As I turned off the paved two-lane onto a sandy red road barely distinguishable from its surroundings, toward a Pueblo-style building that could have been 10 years old or 1,000, I wondered what would happen next. Before I had reached the door, as if on cue, a hefty bearded man wearing a tweed jacket and light-colored slacks was already descending the 3 or 4 steps to what would have been called a lawn, had there been any grass. I took a look at him, mostly to size him up. His beard and white shock of hair seemed anxious to escape his head, and he seemed to take no particular care for his appearance as he walked toward the car, extending his hand. I got out just in time to catch his introduction. He seemed all too sprightly for anyone who knew the pain and suffering of my uncle.
"Edgar?"
"Yes," I replied. "I'm Jim's nephew. I got here as quickly as I could. How is he?"
Fine, said the man.
"I'm Peter Groenfeldt, one of his associates. I work here at the Southwest Institute for Life Advancement. Sila, come on in. Your uncle's expecting you. Can I get you anything to drink?" I asked for a Diet Coke and sat down. I don't know what I was expecting. Maybe guys in white jackets or scientists running around with test tubes or something. But instead, the place looked and smelled like an old house. Then I remembered it had formerly been an abbey.
"We still have a little repair work to do here," he said.
Groenfeldt gestured toward the back of the building with one hand, placing the other on my shoulder, ushering me in.
"Pardon me, let me get your drink and we can continue the conversation."
He excused himself, and I took in my surroundings. There was some evidence of scientific study, papers, equipment racks, and an overabundance of computers, oscilloscopes, and old furniture, but nothing even remotely medical. Most of the life support equipment, I assumed, had been elsewhere in the building, or else Uncle Jim had finally gone off the deep end and joined some kind of nut cult. It was his choice, but the thought made me shiver. As it was, I was uncomfortably cool and went back to the car to get my jacket. By the time I returned, Peter had returned with a warm can of soda and 2 glasses of ice. He sat down.
"I'm afraid we don't have a drink machine yet," he noted with a light chuckle. "Hope to get one soon, after things are done here. By then, we should have enough in-grant money to afford it."
He poured each of us half the soda and smiled, raising his glass in a toast.
"Let's hope so." How's my uncle? I'm sorry, Edgar, he said. Forgive my unkindness. He is in a room at the rear of the Institute and can take no visitors. Due to the extreme frailty of his condition, he cannot be moved. Can I see him? I'm afraid not. Peter motioned at a laptop sitting on a table to his right. But you're more than welcome to use this to talk to him. I've already set up an account for you. In fact, he is quite anxious to speak to you. Peter led me down a dim hallway and showed me to a room that had once been a large closet, now outfitted as a small bedroom. I noticed it had a network connection. The previous owners, an order of monks working on Project Gutenberg, had the place rewired for Ethernet about a year ago, he said, so they could upload the books to the Internet. He smiled, and I thought briefly of a canticle for Leibowitz. Times change. No wireless? I'm afraid not. Security concerns, and electronic interference with some delicate equipment. Peter ducked slightly to avoid bumping his head as he exited down a dark staircase through a heavy wooden doorway. Good night, Edgar. I need to return to work now. If you need me, you can send an email or open a chat session if you like. If not, I will see you tomorrow. Rest well. The door creaked noisily closed behind him, and I waved acknowledgement and turned to the laptop. For a moment, I was seized with an odd, dreamlike sense, but after a few moments, it went away. Hi, Edgar, said a text message at the top of a window. I typed back tentatively. Uncle Jim? Good to see you again, LOL. I smiled at the irony. Me too. How are you? Doing all right. Just waiting. That's the hardest part. Tom Petty was right, huh? Poor devil. He's trying to hold it together until his number comes up. Don't worry, Uncle Jim. It will all be over soon. That wasn't what I had intended to say, and I cringed the moment I hit the return key. Edgar, we need to talk. Now, if possible. Anything you like, Uncle Jim. I'm here for you. Good. Good. His reply was remarkably calm. I want to talk about philosophy and computability theory and... there was my uncle. Always the dreamer. Big thoughts, the future is an open road and it hasn't been driven on yet. Off prospecting for ideas, coming back with a prized nugget of academic gold. Anything you want, Uncle Jim? Edgar? I was momentarily stunned at seeing just the one word, my name, staring at me from the screen. Yes? Do you believe in life after death? I wasn't sure what to type, so I didn't say anything. He evidently picked up on that. I'm not sure either, Ed, but I think I do. Especially now. That's what I want to talk to you about. I need you for something very important, something only you can do. He had called me Ed. The only times in my life Uncle Jim ever used the short form of my name were once when he thought I had knocked up Becky Gillis. Why? Because I have glimpsed immortality. What do you mean? I have stood outside my body and looked back at it. I am no longer concerned about dying. Death cannot beat me. Oh, God, I thought. He continued. I've felt the pain and grief and suffering leave me, and known it to be transitory, an attribute of this life, but not the next. The moment was brief, instantaneous, but it passed, and I re-entered my body with that knowledge. It has given me great peace. We can all have that peace, Ed. Think about it. I made no pretense of a calm reaction. I told him I was thinking about it and that I thought it was a crock of you-know-what. This is exactly what I was afraid of, Uncle Jim. I need you to trust me, Edgar. It's very important. I swallowed and typed a little lie. I trust you. The words were harder to say than I thought, and I waited before sending them. His reply was instantaneous. no matter what. The conversation went on like this for a while. He seemed to accept that my trust was less than full, and I think in some ways there was a tinge of respect in that. I couldn't make myself accept the notion that he had allowed himself to throw away a sizable chunk of his fortune on some crackpot venture in the New Mexico desert, and spend his last days already entombed. It seemed like an incredible waste. He was stupid, not like himself at all, and then again, entirely like himself. He asked if I had heard of Alan Turing. Turing's early research into computability theory had formed the basis for almost all modern computing. Sure I have, Uncle Jim. He's famous in some circles. Jim typed back, "Do you remember the Turing test?" "Yes, I remember." The test basically said that if you couldn't tell from typing on a terminal whether you were talking to a machine or a man, then it didn't matter. They were equivalent. "This is still Uncle Jim, right?" "No tricks, Ed. It's still me. I just wanted to know whether you had any prejudices." I was pretty sure I didn't, but decided to be honest. "Not that I know of." "Good. Good." Uncle Jim had a way of reassuring you that was near contagious. He would say good, good, meaning that everything was in order. No surprises. All is going well. And somehow you would start to believe it, too. "Doubt preserves objectivity, Edgar. Hold on to that position no matter what happens, but trust what you know." "What will happen, Uncle Jim? What are you thinking about?" "The afterlife. How we've all been wrong about it. And the Turing test." I wanted to ask him more, but Peter came around the corner at about the same time and slowly pushed the cover of the laptop shut, forcing it into hibernation. "Your uncle is tired," he said, "and he has much to think about. I beg your indulgence for an hour or two while he rests. Then we'll see if he feels like talking again." He started to leave and I stopped him. I hated him without definite reason. "Somehow I don't think we'll be talking again this evening," I said. "Perhaps," he replied. "But then, there you have it. The unpredictable chaos of reality. We never know what will happen next." "What are you talking about?" "I've studied the behavioral theories of Maslow and Axelrod and Lorenz and Tinbergen, and one thing has always eluded me. As the old song goes, life is but a dream. All creatures learn and remember, but they change. Yet if no one is ever the same from moment to moment, who is really there? We're truly not who we were just seconds ago, but we hold on to our illusions of identity. It's quite a conundrum, don't you think? We die a little each day, so that we might live. Your uncle is always alive as long as you remember him, yet he has already died 1,000 times. He turned away to leave. One for the philosophers. I decided to let the BS roll off my back. "Just one thing," I asked. "Why did he come here?" "He was a visionary," Peter replied. "He invested the first $10 million in the Institute and was responsible for getting several early grants from a number of major insurance companies. Without him, we would be nowhere." He shut the door and it locked behind him. The next day was not substantially different from the previous. It began with a stale cup of rancid black coffee that made me wish they had stocked more Diet Coke, and a bran muffin Groenvelt had brought in, about 1.5 hours ago from the nearest convenience store. When I woke up, the laptop chat session was going again, and the message was waiting from my uncle. "How are you feeling this morning, Edgar?" "Fine. Yourself?" "Like my old self. I suppose I could say there is a spring in my step, if I could feel my feet." I hated deathbed humor, but replied with the online equivalent of a laugh anyway. It seemed to please him. "Get any rest?" he asked. My fingers fumbled on the keyboard as I typed a tired reply. "Yes, about 4 hours. I was worried." "I'm sorry I kept you up past your bedtime." "No worry, Uncle Jim. Say, they outfitted me with a synthetic voice last night. Want to hear it?" For reasons I could not explain, I wanted nothing more than that.
"How's this?" asked a tinny voice a few seconds later.
"It's great," I said, glad to hear his voice again, even if I wasn't hearing it directly. I could hear him exhale, the sound of relief, and it warmed my soul.
"God, it feels good to have a voice again."
He cleared his throat, but it sounded mechanical. I wondered where he was right now.
"Do you remember our conversation from last night?" he asked.
"Yes. Why?"
"Peter and some of my other associates gave me a treatment. I'm pretty excited. I'm hoping it was successful, but regardless, I wanted to hear the sound of your voice and to get your opinion about something."
"What did they do to you?"
"Pete will be able to fill you out on the details."
"Of what?"
"About 6 hours ago, under his instruction, a team of six of the best neurosurgeons in the country performed a sort of transplant on me, if you will. They've been sworn to secrecy, so I'm relying on you to make the final pronouncement of its success to the public. I must warn you, though, to be certain of your conviction that you are now talking to James Bitterman, your uncle. You will need this confidence to face the next step. And you must be absolutely certain you are talking to your uncle."
"What next step?"
"Are you certain that I'm your Uncle Jim?"
"Yes. And an eternal pain in the ass. Get on with it." I remember that I had been called by Peter to observe Uncle Jim's passing. The thought of what that meant now terrified me. "You didn't will Peter any money, did you?"
"Good God, no, Ed. Not him personally. Most of my money is tied up in Sela. Now, with your help, the investment will begin to pay off."
I was afraid you'd say something like that.
"You shouldn't be. Unless you are certain, though, we will lose it all. I've willed all my fortune to you, though if we were successful, you can blow it all in one day, and it wouldn't matter. I'm not talking about the 600 or 700 million I have tied up in projects here and there, either. I refer to all that Sela has learned about the human body and that I have learned about life."
"You have my interest," I replied.
"I don't want your interest, boy. I want your trust."
The change in tone surprised me.
"It's possible," he continued, "that I may be murdered by well-meaning people who do not understand or appreciate what we've done."
"Why? What have we done?" I could hear him sigh.
"Ed, last night, the last pulse of independent electrical activity in the brain of what was once James Everett Bitterman was transferred into a massively parallel neurofuzzy system here at the Institute. I paid for that system with every last cent I had, and now we are one and the same. That's why both your objectivity and faith were so important to me. Why it had to be you."
The air suddenly felt deathly still. As I waited and listened, I could hear the fan motors of laptops, refrigerator compressors, and the tiny sounds of countless machines that sustained human life invisibly. In some ways, they were the sound of human life. I swallowed. "So what happens now?"
"Pete will show you the body. It's up to you to verify for the authorities that it is quite irrevocably dead."
He told me the next part would be difficult.
"Don't worry about that, Ed. Death is like most other things in life, transitory. The difficult part will be dealing with the reaction of the world at large, which, despite religion, doesn't want to believe in such things as eternal life. Pete and Eckhart will deal with the scientific community as best they can, but they are scientists. It is up to you now, Ed, to deal with the rest of the world. Don't fail me. I beg you."
My throat felt tight, and my lungs felt like they would explode. In seconds, I went from nervous to calm, then to exhilarated. Uncle Jim sounded nervous, too, for the first time since his death.
But the son of a bitch had done it. And we were all going to be trillionaires.
It's a new season, and we have some new authors and new storylines that will absolutely delight you. And as you know, we absolutely love our listeners, fans, and patrons. If you loved what you heard, consider joining us over on Patreon. That's where all the fun happens. Just visit www.patreon.com/Melissa Del Toro Voiceover. If you'd like to read more of the stories in the Untold Tales series, not narrated here in our podcast, you can find Jeff's books on Amazon.com in paperback and Kindle format. The links for all of this information are conveniently listed in this episode's show notes. Thank you and have a wonderful day.